America should be grateful to God for the blessings he's given us.
Don't let anyone tell you that America's best days are behind her.
We have got to fight for this nation because I believe with all my heart this nation is in fact one nation under God.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. It's hard not to say the phone number. It's just habit. But our phone lines are out. If you're just joining us here for the second hour, we had a storm run through here. It didn't last long. It was a strong storm, but was kind of in and out. But it was enough to knock out the phone lines. And apparently in the whole area here where the studio is, the phone lines are out. So it is one of those things, that time of year, I guess. But we are trying to get to your questions on Facebook, on the website. So go to the website. Just when you go to the website, you can click on view, just watch live or whatever comes up. I'm not sure what it says, but you can do that. And then on that site, on the sidebar, there's a place you can put your question. Try to help me out a little bit when you give me a question. I've got somebody now on there, you know, asking me a question about a particular thing. I have no idea whether they're 25 or 75, so I'm probably not going to be able to answer it. So I'm likely to skip over it because there's this particular question, there's no way I'm going to answer it. So, you know, I have to talk in so many generalities that I have to give you a scenario if you're this age and a scenario for that age and so on and so forth. It makes it a little bit hard. So if you can give me a little bit of help when you put your question up on Facebook, Twitter, or FISM, our website, you can do that. The upside to a day like this, which is, believe it or not, it's a good thing for us because it drives people to our website. So many of you have been saying, you know, I've been meaning to go to the website and watch, or I've been meaning to go to the phone app and put a question up, or Facebook or somewhere. You know, I've been meaning to do all those things. Now you don't have any choice. I like it. So it's a good thing. Anyway, interesting. You don't have to do this, but it'd be great if I saw where you were from, what state you were in. I would like that. So you could do that too, just like we do on the phone system. That would be great. So you can go to what we say social media, our website, financialissues.org, Facebook, Twitter. What else is there? Instagram? Do we do Instagram? Or no? Okay, we don't take questions here. All right, so anyway, you can do that. So somebody is saying, I wanted to know what's going on with the stock because I'm down. This was that IN42. I bought it off your list. Well, then you haven't owned it all that long if you bought it off my list. I'm content to wait for it to come back. I was just wondering. No, this is a company. First of all, let me just tell you a couple things. We're talking about IN42. One is it's a company that is always going to be extremely volatile. It's a micro cap. I tell people all the time, you need to understand. I tell people if you're over 55, don't even buy a micro cap. It's going to be really hard to live with. So I wouldn't do it. But people do it anyway because they don't look at that. But you should, and I've indicated that hundreds and hundreds of times over the years. So microcap is extremely volatile. It doesn't take a lot of movement to see dramatic swings in a microcap stock. They are smaller than a small cap. So small cap and microcap tend to be more volatile, more market sensitive. So they're the kinds of things that you've got to be careful about. This stock is still very much a hold. I have been waiting for financial data to come out, particular financial data to come out. I am concerned because it is, you know, September, and we haven't got all second quarter financial data. So I am concerned about that. I have been looking into that to see if I can get a handle on what is happening. This is a company that still has an enterprise value of about $1.1 billion. But it is a microcap because it has a capitalization size of 7.43. It pays a 4% yield, which I believe should be cut. Now, whether they cut it or not remains to be seen. It has been the same dividend for 3 years, but it's time for them to consider cutting it. This is a company that tries to return value to their stockholders. It is not a company that is overvalued. It is undervalued. I guess I shouldn't say significantly, but it's way undervalued. Has a lot of room to run from a value perspective. They are located in Oregon. They are somewhat dependent on North America, obviously, but Europe and South Africa, South America, are a big part of what they do. Now, this is a machinery company, and which is, you know, looking at Swiss and German machinery, and they're dependent upon that. That economy is getting clobbered, as I've already pointed out, and that's got a lot to do with it. All right, we've got our ag report coming up. We'll be right back after that, and we'll continue to take your questions. Put it up there on Facebook or our website, FISM, financialissues.org. We'll be right back right after the ag report.
This is Craig Haugard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. Corn traders looked at improving crop conditions in the weekly crop progress report, as well as little threat of frost in the extended forecast, and then proceeded to hammer corn futures down to fresh contract lows yesterday. As I record this, we're bouncing back a little bit and have the spot corn futures trading 2 cents higher. Soybeans traded higher yesterday, and the November contract closed above the 20-day moving average for the first time in a month, which could be seen as a positive by technical traders. Soybeans also gained some fundamental support when the USDA announced the flash sale of 451,766 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to Mexico during the 2019-20 crop marketing year. In the overnight trade, we have spot soybean futures trading up an additional 2 cents. Well, time will tell if it was just a dead cat bounce, but we did have wheat futures higher yesterday. The rally was seen as mainly a technical rally, but bulls looking for a fundamental reason to get or stay long were emboldened by the thought that Australia continues to experience dryness in their wheat-growing regions. In the overnight trade, we have Chicago up a nickel, while Kansas City and Minneapolis are each trading 4 cents higher as I record this. Cotton futures continue to be trapped in a fairly narrow trading range. Yesterday saw the December futures close up 35 points as they settled at 58.21. In the overnight trade, we have spot futures up an additional 58 points. Livestock futures had a mixed performance yesterday. October live cattle futures were 25 cents lower, while October feeder cattle futures were $1.32.5 higher. Lean hog futures turned in another positive session, with the October futures up 60 cents. Class 3 milk futures continue to march higher, with September futures up 7 points to close at 17.79. October futures, on the other hand, closed down 7 points for the day. In the overnight trade, we have spot futures trading 4 cents lower. The cash livestock markets were softer yesterday. The day ended with choice beef boxes 1 cent lower to settle at $2.30.65, while selects were $2.67 lower for the day as they closed at $2.08.95. Pork carcass values lost ground as well as they finished the day $1.74 lower, settling at $72.86 per hundredweight. This has been Craig Haugard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. We'll be right back with more financial issues after this.
Okay, welcome back. Financial Issues. We got a lot of questions coming in. Somebody's asking me that I say sometimes to people that call in, I say, do this and you have more money and you know what to do with. Folks, it's a figure of speech. First of all, let me just say, I only say it to people under 30. So if you're over 30, you know, I mean, I say it to young people that are getting started that generally are putting a fair amount of money, 15%, something like that, of their wages into their retirement. And I give them some ideas of what to do, and I keep it simple. And I say, if you continue to do that, you're going to have more money than you know what to do with. I don't know what it is. I have not a clue. It's a figure of speech. In other words, you're going to be okay. And I guess I'll just start saying okay. But then everybody's going to say, well, what does okay mean? I'm running out of figures of speech that I can use. So anyway, somebody is asking me about a particular stock. Doug is asking me about a healthcare stock. He says, any outlook for reversing the trend that should be put, you know, that should recover a little bit quicker? I mean, if you want to recover quicker than it recovers, then you can dollar cost average down. That's the best way to do that. But again, I say it's a micro cap. So take a look at last couple years. It was up to $40. It was down at $9 just a few months before it hit 40. And a few months before it was $9, it was up to $25. And a few months, not even a few months, a few weeks before it hit that, did I say $20? Actually $25. It was at $8 just a few weeks before that. It's a micro cap. It's the nature of the beast. Biotechnical companies this week are getting clobbered and will continue to do so. When you have a microcap biotech, even more so. So if you want to recover quicker, you can dollar cost average down. If you don't want to do that and you want to sell, you can sell. But if you're in it for the long term, you can hold on there. This company is not as well positioned as the other microcap that I was talking about earlier. But nonetheless, I don't have a position on every stock that goes down when the entire market around the world is going down. So it's hard to have a position on it. There are companies, for instance, biotech in general is going down when it got clobbered yesterday. Does that mean every biotech stock went down? Probably. Should they have gone down? No, probably not. But that's the way it goes in every sector, not just that sector. So in a biotech company, on the healthcare sector, you're going to have a lot of microcaps, which is very volatile. And then you have a sector that has been extremely volatile in the last 2 years. So the combination of those two can be deadly. This is one of those political companies that it's going to have a lot to do with politics. If we have current administration that stays strong through the 2020 elections, then this is a company that is probably going to recover a bit. Will recover all the way? It's hard to say on biotech companies. It depends on what they're doing. If they fall in the territory of where President Trump is saying, we want your prices revealed and we are going to put price controls on, then that's going to hurt their margin because they've grown up and lived in an industry where gouging people is a way of life. And that's what they do. And it adds to their bottom line and their margins are very high. And if they start losing some of that, that could be a problem. Somebody else, again, same deal. So whatever I just said to Doug, I say to Anita about a particular, everybody's saying, what is happening with, it's a down market for healthcare and technologies and biotechs and other pharmaceuticals in general. So that is what's happening. It's a general statement of what is happening. That is what's happening. Has it happened before? A million times it has happened. They go up dramatically. They come down dramatically. Everything in the world of biotech and pharmaceutical is about what is in the pipeline. And I will say again, for the sake of saying it again, because I don't think it can be said too much. If you're over 55 and you've got a portfolio full of, not even full of, but you have sectors that have some micro caps, get ready for a wild ride. It is going to be far more fast and furious than it would be otherwise if you had large cap. And I've said that 1,000 times. It's on my website, written everywhere, and in my instructional videos. So, you know, you've got to take heed and understand that. But let me tell you the problem. The problem is an age-old problem. I'll give you an example. I put a stock on my buy list, and I said, not even worried about anybody buying that shouldn't buy it because it's $160 a share. So I feel so good about that, because only the more the people that have the money and have come to this understanding, when you look at all the big price stocks, you know, they're the ones that are always going to do better and be more stable. And a lot of people now, a lot of our partners that have been around a while have come to that understanding. I had a guy call, I think it was last week or the week before, that said, every stock I own is all these big ticket stocks, but I have the same amount of money vested that I would have if I had the inexpensive stocks, but I've learned my lesson. So, but people buy these. Why? I know you say not to own microcap, but it was only $7 a share. No, it's not $7 a share. You're investing $1,000 in the company. What is the difference? Can somebody explain to me what the difference is between putting your $1,000 into a $7 share stock or putting your $1,000 into a $70 share stock? Can somebody tell me what is going to be the difference on your $1,000? So the $70 stock goes up only 5%. The $7 stock goes down 35%. Your $1,000 is either down 35% or it's up 5%. And in most cases, it's down 35% because nobody wanted to buy a $70 share stock. I can't even begin to describe my frustration with that and how anxious I get about that. Sometimes there are so many stocks. There was one this morning that I did not put on my buy list, because it was only $13 a share, and I didn't put it in because I like the stock, but I don't want everybody and their brother buying it, whether they need it or not, because it's $13 a share stock, so I didn't put it on. I mean, it's just, it's amazing, but until we understand the system, and you're never going to understand the system by just charging ahead. It's not going to work like that. It's not going to work like that. It's about prudence, patience, and persistence. It's not about anything else. You've got to watch the instructional videos. Well, I've heard you say that. Keep watching. I'm going to say something that you didn't hear. It's about reading the things that are all on the website, on that side of the site. It's about spending 15 whole minutes watching a video that explains my strategy, and maybe I need to redo that. I can't make it any shorter because it's complicated, but maybe one of these days I'll redo it. But you've got to watch all that stuff. I will tell you that I very seldom get phone calls or questions or concerns from people that spent time watching all my videos, understanding and reading everything on the website. Very seldom. Very seldom. They totally get it. They have a good grasp. They understand. And they are probably doing very well. I'm just saying. Okay, Teresa is saying, my husband is retiring in January. We already have moved our allocated 401k, but we need to move a pension. We don't want their annuity offer. Any advice on a pension move? We will live off the pension and Social Security. If you are living off the pension, then there is only one thing you can do, and that is move it into an income portfolio that is producing 4 or 5% a year income. If the offer of the annuity was 8 or 9% income, then you may be making a mistake by not taking the annuity. But if you want to move into, but if you're worried about giving up that money, you may be giving it up anyway because you may have to dip into the principal, and over the years you won't have any left. So you need to think about that. I don't know how old you are, and I know you're retiring, but are you retiring at 60? And remember, if you're retiring at 60, the odds are you got 30 more years left, so this money's got to last a long time. So you determine whether the pension money that you're receiving in a lump sum that you're going to put in an IRA account is going to be enough that you can live off 5% of that money. If you can, you're never going to have any problem, and you're going to be able to live off that 5% without dipping into principal over every 10-year period that you live beyond retirement. And that's what you have to do. So you have no choice, Teresa, but to develop a good, solid income portfolio. That's what I would do. That's what I would tell anybody to do, and that's what you have to do. Okay, so Facebook, FISM, website, get your question up. Go to the website, and we'll get to it. We'll be right back after this. Market's up big right now, taking a big jump up. ISM non-manufacturing numbers came out this morning. Non-manufacturing, that's the service sector. That is the largest piece of our economy. We talk often about manufacturing. Manufacturing is important to a certain extent, but it's a very small portion of our economy. The larger portion is service sector industry. And that is non-manufacturing. So it's all the other things that we get or do that is not related necessarily to manufacturing. So it's a very, very important number. So remember that the market went down, or it was blamed on non-manufacturings going down to a level we hadn't seen since August of 2016. Remember that? So that was just on Tuesday, and the markets went down, and they said it was because of manufacturing numbers. Well, now, and I said, so if non-manufacturing numbers go up, right, markets have to go up. Well, that's what happened. Non-manufacturing went from a 53.7 to a 56.4. Again, this harkens back to consumer spending. So somebody tell me why the Fed's mixed up about consumer spending. So this would harken back to that. This is what this number is a correlating number to the consumer spending numbers and consumer sentiment number that we have been getting. And we love numbers where there is correlation from one number to the next number as the way it should be. And we're seeing that, and that is very good news. And markets up significantly on that news. And I saw as well. I'll see if I can find it again. So there's another report out now that says a reliable, they're not giving a name, a reliable China insider. So obviously they're not going to give the name out, because if you're a China insider and you're giving information about what the communist regime is thinking or doing, you don't really feel like you want to get executed that day. So you would like your name not to be put out. So a reliable China insider hinted that the upcoming round of trade talks that is being talked about happening next month, early next month, with high-level officials, probably the vice premier of China, Steve Mnuchin, our Treasury Secretary, Lighthizer, the guy heading up this. Lighthizer is probably the king of juggling one ball at a time that I talk about. I mean, he seems like a great guy. He's a very knowledgeable guy. He's a businessman. But I don't know how he's done so well, because he can only juggle one ball at a time. So the great juggler, Lighthizer, Mnuchin, it looks like this insider is saying and hinting that this round of trade talks could lead to a breakthrough. So on that report that came out, let me see who broke that. I don't know who broke it. I suspect it was Reuters, but I don't know. I see that. I don't know. I don't know who broke it. Maybe it came out from another Asia news report. So anyway, that's what's happening right now. So when that news came out, of course, the markets went up again. That came out apparently 2 hours ago. So that would have been, so that came out at 8:30 or so. So that's another reason why they're saying, so whenever you see, and what I like about this, I've said that before, this before, and it hasn't panned out, but what I like about this report, the very first report of just the fact that there was a China official indicating that, you know, there were trade talks and there was a phone conversation that went very well. I just liked that it came out of China and didn't come out of the White House or someone in the administration, because it gives a little bit more validity to it. And it kills mainstream media because they despise it. So they can't say, well, yeah, that's only President Trump talking. No, they can't do that. So very good news. So that, along with non-manufacturing numbers, really good news. All right, so Stefan is asking, I have a Roth IRA that is that setting up as an income portfolio and plan to take the income. I'm in the 28% tax bracket in retirement. I'm 62 years old and retiring soon. I could do the same with my IRA, but wondering if you think it's better to take taxable income or none from the IRA. Well, I think it's better. My position always is it's better to begin taking income from the IRA, not the Roth. The IRA is the money you want to spend down, not the Roth IRA. That's number one. Now you can start making conversions on a systematic basis, not this year, but next year when you're no longer working. You can start taking distributions, move money from your IRA every year to your Roth. That would be a very good thing to do. But I would have both of those accounts set up in an income portfolio. So obviously you're going to have some of the income portfolio things over in your traditional IRA, some of the things over into your Roth IRA. It doesn't matter where is, you know, what is in what. It's irrelevant, but you want to treat it as one pot of money and one portfolio of the retirement income. And you should be drawing the money equally. Now, you can decide as the money builds up in the money market account inside those accounts, you know, which one you want to take money from at any given time. The goal has to be, particularly for you, because you're young, you're 62, your goal has to be that you can live off of 5 to 6%. Anything more than that is likely going to create some years where you're going to have to draw into principal in order to make the money that you need. Once you start drawing into principal, you stand a very, very, very high risk of eating away in dramatic fashion your principal. Because during the time of your retirement, we will have several years where the market will be down significantly. Now you're taking positions that are at significant losses and you've got to sell them, some of that, in order to get the cash to pay your distribution. Anytime you put yourself in that position, you are never, ever, ever going to recover that money. It's gone forever. It is not just principal that you're taking in a rising market where you have a chance to make it back up. You're never, that money is gone. And when you do that three or four times, or maybe more, that is going to dramatically reduce the principal that is working for you to generate income. And that is usually, not usually, that is always where people that retire young get into trouble. Always. It's where they get into trouble. They're depending too highly upon the money they have saved, and we get a down market like 2008, where they're selling off positions that are down significantly, and they never recover from that. They, all of a sudden, they never have the same principal that they did. I mean, they're just never going to recover from that. And that is a very difficult situation. And the younger you are, the more conscious you have to be aware of that. So I would just say, if whatever amount of money you have, you might have $2 million. And 5% off that $2 million may be way more money than you're ever going to need. And if you're in that situation, you have nothing to worry about. You'll be fine. But keep that in mind. When you develop that income portfolio, don't be overly optimistic and think you're going to create 8%. But I have to have 8%, Dan, because I need that much to live off. And so I'm going to try to create 8%. I think I can do it. I think you can do it too. But you're not going to do it without significant risk. You're not. Now, somebody might tell you you can't. You're not. Yeah, but this advisor says he can. You're not. Well, I know a buddy that's doing it. And he's doing it. You're not. I'm just telling you. You're not going to do it. What you're doing is you're just helping that drop faster, dipping into principal in a down market, you're just helping that along so it's going to happen sooner than it might normally. Because now those things that are producing 8% are more risky. They're more aggressive positions. Do you think they're paying 8% because they just love giving people money? You think that's why they're paying 8%? Or could it be that they're paying 8% because nobody wants their stock? Because it's very risky. Just saying. That's why, by the way. So I'm just telling you, if you think you're going to do that, you might get away with it for a couple years. But when it falls, it's going to fall like a rock and you're going to be hurt big time. And I'm not trying to discourage you. I'm just trying to give you the reality of it. So hopefully that helps you, Stefan. All right, we're going to be right back. Facebook. FISM, put your question up there. Hopefully we'll have our phones back for Rapid Fire Friday tomorrow. We'll be right back.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back, Financial Issue. Sarah is saying on Facebook, is there anything we consumers can do to help the yield curve, not be inverted? No, there really isn't. That's a great question, Sarah. I wish it were that simple. Frankly, what consumers are doing right now is everything that consumers should be doing, and it should be helping the yield curve. I think the Federal Reserve can't even figure it out. It's an organic movement in the yield curve based on, in my opinion, it is based on a negative media and global markets right now. And it's nothing more than that. So the Federal Reserve is the only one that can do something about that. So they're in a very difficult situation. They can lower the interest rate, which they are going to do next week or the week after that. I think it's the week after next. So they're going to cut at least another 25 basis points. Maybe they'll cut 50 basis points. That will help a little bit. But that's all they can do. And right now, the yield curve's got a little bit of a mind of its own. But let me just tell you what happens to the yield curve. So Germany's going into recession, it looks like, this year. They got one negative quarter, and it looks like they're heading into the third quarter. That could be a negative quarter as well based on some of the numbers. Everywhere in the Eurozone, we've got negative interest rates everywhere around the world. So that means when people put their money in the bank to be safe, they have to pay the bank to keep the money in there. That's what it means. They're paying the bank a half of 1% to keep their money safe. I know that sounds nuts, but that's what's happening. So people that can are flocking to America. They're flocking to U.S. treasuries so they can at least get something, even if it's 1%. They can get something as far as yield. When people are buying U.S. treasuries, the return, the yield, comes down. Why? Because it can. Why would the Treasury Department pay somebody a higher interest if they don't have to? And they don't have to. People are coming just because they can get some yield. So they're buying up treasuries. And I say people, it's a lot of institutions, even government. Governments coming here, buying our yield curve. Now, buying our treasuries. Now, that's a very good thing for America. Well, some would say it's a very good thing. Allows the Treasury Department to keep the printing press running and print dollars because they have buyers to buy up the debt.
I don't like that.
That's the way it is. So that's what's driving the yield curve right now. And so when we look at yield curves going down, when the yield going down on treasuries, it generally is an indication that the economy is not doing well. Well, in this case, it's more of an indication that the global economy is doing horribly. So our economy doing okay is not enough to keep it propped up. So there's really not a lot we can do to prevent that. It was a great question, though, Sarah. I'm glad you asked it. Wilford is asking, Dan, I'm 64 years old. I am retiring next year, but not by choice, but by circumstances. I plan to sign up for Medicare and Samaritan's Ministry as a supplement, medical insurance. Plan to draw Social Security at age 70. Good for you. That's smart. Have a $500,000 invested in a Roth 401k and brokerage. So I guess the combination of an investment account brokerage and the Roth 401k, that's good. A plan to draw from the brokerage account until I reach 60 and a half. Would this be a good plan? And what are your other recommendations for someone my age? Have no debt by the grace of God and in good health. I'll tell you what I would rather see you do. I would rather see you pull, if you have any 401k that is traditional, which it sounds like you do because you wrote Roth, 401k, you don't put a comma, but and a brokerage account. So it sounds like you have three accounts. I would rather see you, not this year, because you had income this year, you were still working half the year or whatever it was. So next year, though, I would rather you use your 401k traditional to supplement your income. I would rather you do that because that makes far more sense than anything else. Yes, you'll have to pay tax on it. You're going to be in a lower tax bracket, obviously, because you're not working, you don't have income. So that's why I said, let's wait till next year. But I would rather you do that. It helps diminish that 401k. That along with rolling some of that over the years into your Roth is a good thing. So that, but if you don't want to do that, if you don't want that tax burden, I'm okay with that too, and just stick to your plan and that would be fine. Okay? Good plan though. It sounds like you're on the right track. And that's a shame that somebody that is healthy, in good shape, and you know, willing to work is unable to. That's disappointing that they circumstances were such that they had to let you go. All right. Christopher is saying, Dan, I'm 67. My wife is 66. We're both retired. I want to wait till I'm 70 before taking my Social Security benefits. My wife wants to take her Social Security benefits now. Will her taking benefits now affect the amount of my benefits when I turn 70? We both have enough income from other sources. No, it's not going to impact your Social Security at all. So your wife taking her Social Security, that's fine. It's not going to impact what you take at 70 and a half. It's better for you to wait. If you can wait, hang in there and wait because I would suspect that your Social Security is the larger of the two. So, I mean, I would like your wife to wait, but I assume she can't. But if she's not going to wait, that's fine. She's still at full retirement age. She's just not going to get that 30% more money by waiting until she's 70. That's fine if she wants to do that, but it's not going to impact yours. Thank you, Christopher. That's a great question. Marceline. Hi, Dan. in Illinois today. Semi-retired, just moved my funds from one source and my pension, my previous, from my, into one source from my previous financial person. Bought other Timothy funds. I now have, she's listing the Timothy funds that she has. I am retired using 65 to retirement. Do I trade these out for the suggested plan or keep them? What categories for each area? No, I wouldn't I wouldn't change anything. I would leave everything just like it is. Now, you might want to, since you maybe have that ability to do that, to follow the Timothy plan completely on the asset allocation model. So when you look at the asset allocation model for 65 into retirement, there's that first group of asset allocation models. Scroll down the list, and I think the next thing is TSP, so you got to go past that. And you get to Timothy asset allocations. I would want you to follow the Timothy asset allocation model for 65 into retirement and stick to that plan, and that'll work for you fine. So you're on the right track. You're doing the right things. Folks, by the way, we've got another hour and 5 minutes left, a couple minutes left. You can go to Facebook, FISM.org, and put your question up, and we are going to stick with all that. We've got a lot of questions, so but we're gonna stick with them. Some of them are real quick, and we can answer them quick and move on. So if you want to cue your question up, you're welcome to do that. Gene is saying, good morning, Dan. I appreciate all that you do. I live in Louisiana, and I'm a partner, 55 to 65 asset allocation models, but do not desire to put 4% into preferred stock sector since I am not a big